Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. In the last 2 weeks, we've discussed a proposal to eliminate school property taxes and replace them with a higher income tax and increase in expanded sales taxes. We continue our series on programs on property taxes today with the story of Clean and Green, a state program that is leaving billions of dollars in property taxes on the table for some taxpayers and leaving other taxpayers to make up the difference. The Allentown Morning Call reported this story last week, and we're joined by the two reporters who investigated and wrote the stories. Joining us, Allentown Morning Call reporters Steve Essick and Riley Yates. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Steve, let me start with you. Provide us with some background and history of Act 319, as this is called, or Clean and Green. We might interchange these throughout the program, but Act 319 or Clean and Green?
Well, this was a law that started during the 1970s environmental awareness movement. Back then, there was a huge societal push to clean up the environment, air, water, and that sort of thing, because of and suburban sprawl was happening. So in 1973, there was a voter referendum out there that asked the voters to change the state constitution, because under the constitution, all taxes have to be uniform. You have to have the same type of tax for everybody. So the referendum asked voters, would they be willing to give large landowners a preferential assessment, basically a lower assessment? That in itself, that referendum was not defined. How would they classify which properties would get this? In 1974, after it overwhelmingly passed in 1973, the legislature, through a long debate, decided to create Act 319, became Clean and Green, and that set threshold for at least 10 acres of land and for forest, open space, or farmland, and also for a, if it's under 10 acres, for $2,000 in commodity sales. However, Act 319 was the second land preservation law. The state created another one without a voter referendum in 1966. That's known as Act 515, and that had slightly larger land holdings that benefited from this. However, it wasn't used across the state because it was only implemented in like the Philadelphia suburbs and the Lehigh Valley, where development pressures were the greatest. In 1973, with that voter push, the farmers as well as conservationists, they wanted that preferential assessment to be across the state, and that's what led to Clean and Green.
So the idea was that to limit development of green spaces, farmland, and forest. Riley, who were the targets? Who was supposed to take advantage of this?
Well, the broadly, it's supposed to be farmers, or at least it's usually spoken of publicly with farmers. But, you know, the idea, as you can imagine, is as market values go up, farmers have to pay more and more in taxes, and there's this fear that farmers will be taxed off their lands. And so they came up with this idea to give them a break and to tax them based on what their lands are producing instead of what they're worth on the market. And they also then, to build this coalition, they threw in forest lands, and they also threw in what's called agricultural reserve, which would be open space. And so all three of these things are entitled to it. To a much lower assessment. It can be, the state estimates it's about 50%. It can be up to pennies on the dollar on the land. And what you find is over the years, people have figured out that this can be used perhaps not for land conservation or for sort of higher meaning, but simply to save taxes.
Steve, it seems as though very few people are familiar with this. In the course of your reporting, it seems as though there were many people, even in government, who are not very familiar with how this was being used.
Yeah, that is correct. I mean, I got involved in this by starting to look at it because I covered a legislature here in Harrisburg, and I was wondering, why are these bills you talked about last week, Senate Bill 76, to get rid of property tax, why are the loudest proponents of this bill tend to come from rural communities? So I started looking at farmland preservations, thinking it was something there, and I came upon Clean and Green. And I never heard of it. I was confusing Clean and Green with Growing Greener.
Right. You know, I have to admit, I did too when you first mentioned it to
yeah,
me.
So, yeah, so Growing Greener was, I believe, Governor Ridge created mm-hmm. that program. So I was confused by that, and I started looking at it, and I started sending right-to-know requests for this kind of information. And when the records came back to me, to the county assessment offices, they were just, records were all over the place. I didn't realize the... all the counties had different criteria for counting these records, cataloging them, and that sort of thing. So when I started looking at that, Riley called me up, you know, out of the blue and said, "What do you know about Clean and Green?" And I said, "Well, it just so happens I have these records here." So we teamed up with that. And as we were reporting on this issue, we were both kind of stunned that so many people really did not know what this law was in this day and age. And even the county assessment office, some counties, when I got these records, they didn't even have the records digitized. You know, Monroe County, for example, had to create something. Dauphin County wanted to charge me $1,000 for these records, which are really just assessment records, but I talked them out of it and got some other records. We really only focused our reporting on Lehigh and Northampton County when we realized just how expansive this program really was. And it was just stunning when we started looking at them, crunching the numbers, that no one knew what was going on, and no one still knows what's really going on.
And that is one of the takeaways of your series, is that when you say no one knows what's going on, a lot of this, and Ryan, I think you used the word state estimates, a lot of this is estimates because there doesn't appear to be a whole lot of state oversight in this. So just so everyone knows what we're talking about here, how much money are we talking about that some big landowners, some people who have a lot of money, some that have large estates. I'm going to talk about Mario Andretti in just a few minutes, but that how much money are we talking about that some of these people are saving because their properties have been assessed at a lower rate? Riley?
So we found $16.7 billion in discounted assessments in the 59 counties that have Clean and Green. And that's assessed value. That's a little different than tax revenue. But to get a sense of it, we looked at the Lehigh Valley. You have $1.2 billion in discounts, which, crunching the numbers, we came up with was about $30.2 million in revenue. And so that's money that is being shifted from the taxpayers who would be paying it onto somebody else.
Well, that's
if you took that. Statewide, if you assumed about the same ratio, you'd be talking about $420 million. That's kind of back of the envelope calculations, but that gives a sense of what's being shifted.
Okay, when you say $420 million, that's what, in a year?
That would be our data was from 16-17 tax year.
Okay, and I want to clarify, when you say that you know, these property owners are getting discounts, that is money that is not going away. That is being made up by other property owners, right?
Yeah, I like to think of it like a pie, and what you have is you have the government sets the spending and figures out how much money they need to fund their operations. It then gets divvied. The pie gets sliced based on what the tax base is. So the lower the tax base, the bigger each individual person's slice of the pie is. And so what happens is, if, you know, I'm not paying $5,000 in property taxes, someone else is.
So, Steve, who was this originally directed to? Who was targeted that they wanted to keep the money from, keep the land from being developed?
It really was farmers. As a former State Representative and Congressman Joe Pitts out of from Chester County told us, because this came about in the early 1970s, Chester County did a reassessment, and every time a county does a reassessment, a reassessment is supposed to be revenue neutral, where some people's taxes go up, some people's taxes go down, or I'm not sorry, not their taxes, their assessment value. So if you have more land, your assessments are going to go up. So those farmers in Chester County in the 70s, Joe Pitts said, were up in arms. They were afraid that they were going to have to sell. And so to get that over the finish line in the legislature, it's all negotiated. So as Riley said earlier, they teamed up with conservationists who prize the open space. So it was really geared toward the farmers, and then the conservationists, especially in the Philadelphia suburbs, where, you know, back in the 70s, the air was awful, the water was terrible. So that they teamed it up and they wanted their open space. Now, I pulled the Legislative Journal record from the 70s, and it was really interesting to see that, because you had lawmakers from rural areas saying, no, we can't allow the open space because you're going to gobble up wealthy estates. Wealthy estates are going to come into this. Golf courses are going to come into this. And the lawmakers from the Philadelphia region were saying, no, we need the open space in our community. So it was a very, it's one of the few times, I guess, where the geographic differences across Pennsylvania, which can lead to legislation, kind of came together for everybody else's purposes.
But that's exactly what happened then. Something that was originally designed to preserve farmland and then maybe forest land conservation turned into a lot of large estates, people with a lot of money, golf courses, quarries.
Yeah.
Describe what happened.
And that's what it is. And so when Riley and I looked at this, that there was 8,000, about 8,500 properties in Lehigh and Northampton counties. So when we got the records, we went parcel to parcel to parcel, and we identified the record. We checked online what it was. We cataloged what it was, and we decided that we were going to look at we're going to stop our analysis at like 4,000 square feet for a house, which was about double the average size of a home being built now. So if it's 4,000 square foot, it's a McMansion or larger. And when we did that, we also were cataloging how many of them also had swimming pools, how many of them had tennis courts, your normal, you know, what you would consider wealth, you know, status type of symbol in someone's house. So when we started cataloging all those things, we were able to differentiate, okay, these are the wealthy estates that someone else is paying for, lack of a better term.
Yeah, so we found 276 homes of 4,000 square feet or more and 452 parcels with pools and 11 with tennis courts. And, you know, supporters of the law would say, well, that's a very small portion of the larger picture. And, you know, certainly supporters say that this law has done a lot to, has done exactly what it's supposed to, which is preserve open space, preserve forests, and preserve farms.
Mario Andretti, the race car driver, I have to bring that up, though, because that was one of the estates you looked at. 78 acres, 22,000 square foot, 15 bathrooms. Now, he does pay $65,000 a year in taxes, but under Clean and Green, he saves about $11,000. And I understand, Riley, he wasn't real happy talking to you.
I mean, it's a tough conversation, and I don't blame him for that, or any of the people I spoke to. I mean, a lot of the people were defensive, and understandably so. I mean, nobody likes to talk about, you know, their personal finances with a reporter, and I get that, and I accept that at face value, but it's a big home. It was a good vehicle to tell the story, because obviously Mario Andretti's a household name. But, you know, in his defense, he leases some of the land to a farmer, and he says, hey, if I wasn't around, this would be developed, and this could be a housing development that's sending a bunch more kids to school and taxing services.
We're going to take your phone calls in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, Allentown Morning Call reporters Steve Asick and Riley Yates. We're talking about their series that they wrote in the Allentown Morning Call last week. And by the way, we have a link on our website, WITF.org. But their series that focused on Act 319 or Clean and Green, a program from the 1970s that provided discounts on property tax assessments, that there are a lot of, it was designed for farmers, and there there are farmers taking advantage of it to keep them from selling land off for development, but there are a lot of others that are using that law as well, and that tax burden is then shifted onto other taxpayers, most often middle-class taxpayers. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Lenny in Mannheim. Lenny, you're on the air.
Good morning. My question and comment was, I would like to know, I would like you to define a little bit better who benefits and who doesn't. Finding a few rich guys that are not paying your fair share is kind of vague. I live in a dairy farm here in Mannheim. It's an 85-acre farm, and I can tell you here in Mannheim, where it's dairy country, every single farmer, 90%, are middle-class people making $30,000 to $60,000 a year. And if you start tinkering around with that act, what's going to happen is these people will have to sell, because you jack up their property taxes a few thousand dollars a year with mortgages, with what the EPA is doing to farmers. I'm sorry, this a non-starter for me anyway.
No, so, Lenny, Lenny, there are a lot of farmers, according to these gentlemen's stories, that in the same boat that said the same thing. Thank you very much for your call.
I would say that that's one of the arguments you hear a lot from the agricultural community, which is exactly that, which is if you start tinkering with the law, it could have unintended consequences that hurt the core base of whom it's supposed to benefit. And I think that's one of the reasons that you haven't seen over the years any sort of big push to address some of these maybe problematic properties.
And I would just add too that it's farmers are out there. The public loves to help farmers. They just do. It's an easy sell legislatively.
Well, they provide our food, Steve.
Exactly. However, there's no way to know under this law how many of these acres are actually farmed, because the counties have different ways of counting it. The state agriculture department that's supposed to oversee this law says it ain't our fault. It's up to the counties to better quantify this and to better count the parcels. However, the state agriculture department doesn't do anything to make sure that the counties count these records correctly. So out of like nearly more than 9 million acres in Pennsylvania in this program, no one knows how many of them are farmed, how many of them are forest, how many of them are open space. So you can make that argument, as that gentleman just did said, but excuse me. But I just want to see, how many of the land, actually has cows on it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, by the state's own statistics, which albeit are incomplete, 4.7 million acres are forest lands, 3.9 million acres are agriculture, and 525,000 are agricultural reserve, the open space lands. So, I mean, even by the state's own statistics, forests are the lead beneficiary of the program.
And I would point out too on the forest programs, forest owners, these private preserves, they don't have to do anything except make the acreage requirements, 10 acres. They don't have to manage their land. They don't have to control for invasive species. They don't have to control for timber. The DCNR has no idea. The Agriculture Department has no idea how many of the lands are actually timbered. So you just have a very you have a giveaway is what it comes down to. One of the gentlemen we spoke to, Andy Loza, at a conservation program said, and it's not really benefiting or creating conservation if you don't count the records correctly.
So. Let's take another call from Ed in Bartow. Ed, you're on the air. Oh, we lost Ed. Okay. Let's see who else we have here. Gary's in Juniata County. Gary, you're on the air.
Scott, I have listened to your show for I don't know how many years now, and I have never, ever, ever heard anything so biased in my life. When somebody doesn't pay the same amount of tax as somebody else, that means that they're criminals or whatever. I have a farm, 126 acres, 60-some acres are woods. I have to pay tax on that ground that I am never going to do anything with except grow trees that you guys use for getting clean air. And I guess what I'm saying is it makes me angry that I have to pay tax on certain grounds that are highly erodible, that if somebody tried to develop them, they would create so much trouble for everybody. And I guess you're making it sound like it's a big tax dodge that, well, if somebody doesn't pay this, then somebody else has to. We all know property tax is unfair. The fact that some people pay more than other people, if I go to get a permit to put even a shed on my farm, I instantly trigger a tax assessment, even a shed. So I guess what I'm saying is if a county or a local municipality doesn't do a good job, and if you want to close the loopholes, just say, you know, if you're making money off a golf course, it shouldn't be considered clean and green. Don't go after people that are really trying hard to make a contribution to this country and to our areas. And the fact that I don't pay quite as much tax as somebody else who would have 126 acres doesn't even make me feel bad.
Well, Gary, let me stop you for a second.
Cheating somebody else.
Gary, let me stop you for a second. First of all, by saying that making someone out to be a criminal, I don't think anyone is going that far. I think what the stories have done is pointed out that the program, there are a lot of property owners that are using this program, taking advantage of this program legally, that it was not intended for it to be. So that's one thing. Riley, I understand you wanted to respond to that too.
Yeah, I mean, my one question to Gary would be, you know, in the issue, I think that there's a large consensus in Pennsylvania that people want to help farmers, and I think that the voices of the we conducted 60 plus interviews for this series. There, I don't think there was any voices that said we shouldn't be helping farmers or clean and green shouldn't be helping farmers. There were voices that said the criteria need to be tightened and we need to make sure that it's sticking to its actual mission. And my question to Gary would be, does he find that offensive or biased, you know, that to simply ensure that we're actually giving tax breaks to those people that we intend to give them to?
Yeah, but you got to go back and listen to some of your wording is, you know, well, somebody doesn't pay this, then somebody else has to or whatever. If everybody has voted that they want to see open spaces, whatever, I have probably 50 or 60 acres of what's considered highly erodible ground. I plant grass on that, and I still pay taxes. That ground is not developable, and I have to pay taxes on it, even though I'm trying my best to keep this farm in the most pristine condition that I can. I should be getting something for that, not having to pay taxes on it. And you're making it sound like, well, I'm cheating the school district because I'm not paying as much as somebody who would put a 2,000 square foot home on there and macadam it and do whatever he has to do to not save that ground. So
yeah,
the wording you guys are using is just not correct.
We're not saying that you're cheating the school district. What we're saying is the reality is that tax burden gets shifted, and that's just the reality of how the property tax system works.
Right.
We could have a debate about whether the property tax system should exist, but that's a different question.
Yeah. Hey, Gary, thank you very much for your call. What are you going to say, Steve?
Yeah, I was going to say, when the legislature created this, the legislature does what the legislature often does is it didn't provide any money for it. It put this a program on the backs of local taxpayers. And the more properties you have in clean and green, the greater the subsidy, lack of a better word, the greater that tax shift is. So in a highly rural communities like in Northwestern Lehigh School District, the property taxes go up 30%. That percentage of goes down as we wrote when the rural communities give way to suburbs and the cities. So in urban areas that are in more need of open space, as Tim Kelsey, a Penn State professor, pointed out, is they're not paying that much. It's like a backwards dynamic. So if you're in a rural community surrounded by open space and someone has open space there and they're in this program, you're paying for something you don't need. And there were pushes, but ideas. In 1997, the legislative study that we pointed out recommended that the legislature start paying some money to communities that are impacted the greatest by this. State Representative Brian Cutler in 2009 had a bill to do just that. If a local community or school district had saw their taxes go up by at least 10%, the state would kick in money toward that. That bill never went anywhere, obviously. So people are aware that this law, the way it was set up originally in the 70s, it is a local tax burden.
We have an email here from Jim in Harrisburg who says, "Clean and green is just one more example of a broken statewide taxation system. The property tax system, where property tax assessments vary on similarly valued property in the same county and several counties have not reassessed properties in 40 plus years, is reflective of our dysfunctional General Assembly, where inaction is way of business. Until the legislature's reformed, including the manner in which legislative redistributing is done, we are unlikely to address the challenges like those posed by programs like Clean and Green." I don't know whether you address this in the stories or not.
No, but we didn't. But what happens is under an update to Clean and Green, and I forget what year it was, but whenever a county does a reassessment, that county automatically has to enact Clean and Green. So when you do that, it basically it puts more property in there.
So that's why it's not in 67 counties, right?
That is correct, yes, because there's some counties all over the state who haven't reassessed in decades and that kind of thing. But, you know, Indiana County, I think it was Jefferson County or Indiana County, they just reassessed and they went into the program too, and that changed their dynamic and that kind of thing as it relates to this.
Let's take a call from Ed in Bartow. Ed, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Glad to hear you wrote that article. I'm a local township supervisor in southeastern Berks County, and we have approximately, I apologize for not having the data in front of me, but we have close to 40% of our land area is in Clean and Green, and less than 6% is actually farmed. As a matter of fact, we've had a net loss in farmland as a result of the Clean and Green program. We had one 70-acre farm approximately 10 years ago that was subdivided into six 10-acre parcels that McMansions went on. And we had another subdivision of approximately the same size where two 10-acre lots were created, and the balance was broken up into 3-acre lots. Because one of the big issues that I have with this program is that if you break the Clean and Green covenant, you only pay back taxes for 7 years. And to a developer, that's an extra lot.
Hey, thank you.
It's just terribly unfair that those, and an earlier caller asked the question, this is real simple. Those with more than 10 acres of land get a break. Those with less than 10 acres of land pay for those with more than 10. We all want to support farmers, don't get me wrong, but it does not support farms in my township.
Thank you very much for your call.
And that's something that we found, is we found that this is something that is marketed by real estate agents as, hey, here's a 10-acre lot. Here's a land on 10-acre lots. You're going to save a lot of money in taxes. And so it becomes a selling tool, and it's something that developers certainly are aware of because, as he said, you can take a 100-acre farm, cut it into 10-acre homes, and all those homes will get the same tax break.
And you also wrote, Riley, about, you know, as Ed was describing, that if someone pulls out of the program, that they do have to pay those back taxes, right?
Yeah, that's right. You pay 7 years of back taxes plus 6% interest. But what we found is that when you're talking about the big box developments, and in southeastern Pennsylvania, at least, that seems to be what most people are concerned about, the big truck warehouses and stuff like that. It just, the tax penalty just isn't significant enough to stop development.
Right. And
so if you have a pristine farm right by the highway, the reality is that there's someone who's going to want to build a warehouse there, and $100,000 in back taxes isn't going to prevent them from doing so.
Right, and if it's a large housing development, what developers told us is those developers will then just the developer will will eat that penalty, that rollback penalty. But if he's building a house, instead of charging $150,000 for the house, he'll charge $200,000. So the homeowner who's buying that home is actually paying that rollback. They don't know it, but that's the cost of doing business.
It was interesting, though, that Ed said that they've actually lost farms under this. How's that happen?
Well, as Riley said, and they did it. So if you have one farm that's 100 acres, it's a working farm, that person then sells it to a developer, and that developer then carves that land up in a way that is with the footprint of the home, it's still enough acreage to qualify for that open space. So therefore, it goes from a farm under ag use under the program to agricultural reserve, which is the phrase that's used for open space. So it just moves from one category to another, but the tax break stays the same. So it's not a working farm anymore.
Let's take a call from Michael in York. Michael, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, fellas. Tip of the hat on you on the story, and of course it's challenging to keep up with the details. Sounds like you might want to follow up with that sound supervisor as well. My question is, and this may go outside of your own purview, but what do you think is the appetite? Because what we're talking about is some funding or some adjustments in the agencies in terms of how they're going to monitor and maybe go back and gather data in a more specific way to be able to push legislation through to make some adjustments. And so what do you think is the appetite for that with our current budget thing? And I guess I would add on a quick question. Do you think the Cutler bill from 2009 can be resurrected in some fashion?
Thank you very much for your call.
I'm not sure if Representative Cutler will bring it up again. He did email me and said, good article. Thanks for doing it. But I don't know where he is with that. However, as one of the stories Riley and I did is through the course of our interviews, lots of people from Penn State professors to county assessors to county commissioners who also are farmers, they all had ideas how to fix this law. And a lot of it is just, better record keeping, changing the adjustments of the acreage. Because one of the things was that if you have under 10 acres, all you got to do is show $2,000 worth of commodity sales. Well, that number, $2,000, dates to 1974. If you were to tie that to inflation, it would be over $10,000 right now in today's money. So there were different ideas of how to do this. And a different idea from a Penn State professor says, if farmers in different areas have different needs, like a farmer in the Lehigh Valley, more urban areas, they're farming on less acreage than somebody in Tioga County. So their idea was to give counties the ability to use this program, but to base their own, to change the acreage requirements that as best fits their needs, as opposed to one size fits all across Pennsylvania.
But going back to one of his questions, you did talk to the Wolf administration about this, and when he, using our caller's language, whether there was an appetite to change anything, from what I read in your articles, there didn't appear to be.
Yeah, I mean, there have been, since the articles have been published, we've had a few local elected officials saying, yeah, we think that there should be reforms. How much appetite that there is for that, Steve might have a better sense of. My own belief is that, when you're talking about these tax breaks, it's ultimately not the governments that are really paying for it. It's individual taxpayers. And so absent some sort of big revolt, it's largely revenue neutral for both the state and the county. And what we've seen is that the state and the counties will blame each other for any problematic properties. And so I'm not sure how interested ultimately they'll be.
It's the legislature. This is a very complicated issue. It would take them time to delve into it, take them time to do anything about it. And in the week or so since we've written this thing, I haven't seen any. No lawmakers contacted me or Riley or really and said, I need to fix this, any appetite to do anything. However, later on today, the House Agricultural Affairs Committee will be holding a hearing to perhaps do a $200 million bond to by easements for forest tracts, you know, because DCNR in 2016 had a report that said, you know, Clean and Green isn't really protecting from development. So their idea is to do a $200 million bond to buy people's development rights for large forest tracts to preserve them.
So borrowing money.
Yes, exactly. But borrowing money, whether our story or Clean and Green will come up in that hearing, you know, wait and see.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, Allentown Morning Call reporter Steve Essick and Riley Yates. They've recently written a series of articles about Clean and Green, or Act 319, tax benefits or tax assessment benefits for large landowners. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. A couple more emails. Lisa says, Clean and Green is a benefit to our rural properties. Farmers would not be able to afford taxes in areas where development is growing way too fast, like Lancaster County. As a small property owner who's maintaining our property for open space in a rural area, Clean and Green has enabled us to do so. It's ridiculous to assume that no one knows what's going on. Rural municipalities are greatly aware of Clean and Green. My township deals with it regularly because when a Clean and Green property does end up sold for development, the back taxes at that time must be paid. So, gentlemen, you want to respond to that? Riley?
I mean, that's a voice that you hear a lot in this debate, which is, you know, to supporters of Clean and Green, it's serving a very, very valuable purpose. And even people who are critical of Clean and Green often, you know, acknowledge that you know, keeping land from development is important. What's at the issue is sort of at the margins, and whether the criteria need to be tightened, or you know, whether it's actually serving its original mission.
And something else that was pointed out in your articles, and I think one of our other callers mentioned this as well, that it did or has helped the environment. There's cleaner water and air because there's not as much development, not as much pavement out there. So it's seen as a plus for the environment.
Yes, but however, you also have to realize that this law was enacted at almost the same exact time as the federal clean air and clean water laws were enacted. So they all went hand in glove. You can't say that this is all Clean and Green. No, part of it is the federal laws and also the state laws along the same line. So it was all these laws came about at roughly the same time. I'd also like to point out too the issue about development is the proponents of this law say, you know, it stops development. However, it doesn't stop it in, you know, market-driven development where the real estate market is really hot. And as Riley and I were reporting this story, it just was a coincidence that every newspaper's website across Pennsylvania seemed to, from the Morning Call, Philadelphia Inquirer, the Lancaster newspapers, they all started running ads for rural real estate. And I started clicking on these ads because there was a big banner ad across the top of our website. And all 90 some percent of these ads for all these properties were touting Clean and Green tax benefits. Some of them were saying, bring your developer, bring your dream house, low property taxes. There was none of this public good that the law was supposed to bring about in the 70s. It was all about me right now, you know, with these ads. And we ended up quoting a couple of them in a couple of the stories.
Let's take a call from Mark in Gettysburg. Mark, you're on the air.
Hello. Yeah, we have we are eligible for Clean and Green. We do have just over 10 acres. We qualify for Forest Reserve, and we do get the tax break, and we have friends in the same situation. Now, I must admit that there's really no reason for it. It's nice. But I think a lot of us probably realize that this is a break we're not entitled to.
Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, we bought the property not knowing anything about Clean and Green. So we never, taxes never entered into it. The previous owner may have. It was actually subdivided from a larger property, and so I think there was, they created three 10-acre lots out of it, and there's one of them. And it's nice, and it is forest preserved, so we are, of course, we also donated an easement to the Land Conservancy to protect it. But realistically, it's a nice break that doesn't really benefit the population.
Thank you very much for your call, Steve.
And that's something that we found in our reporting. You know, I had the duty of calling a lot of these mansion owners, and the ones who spoke to me, you know, almost to a rule, they didn't know what category of lands they were in. They were unaware of, you know, a lot of times it was simply that it was passed on from a previous owner. And the question I think that comes up with that is that tax break really necessary for them to preserve their land? And, or if they didn't have the tax break, would they be preserving that land because they want to have the privacy and because they bought this home that is their dream house?
Steve, you mentioned farmland preservation earlier. Pennsylvania has more farms preserved than any other state in the country. By any measure, it's been called a great success in preserving farmland in the state. How is Clean and Green, or Act 319, different than our farmland preservation program?
Well, Clean and Green is just you get a lower assessed value of it. When you preserve a farm, you are receiving a check from the government, be it usually a combination of the state and the county has money, and they are buying your development rights for eternity. So they're basically saying, we are going to buy this land as a working farm, and it is going to stay in a farm, so you can never put a home on there. So when the farmer does that, he gets a check, he or she gets a check from the government, sells off their development rights, and they're also receiving the Clean and Green lower assessment. So they get a check for the development rights, and they're paying less money for the remainder of their time as a farm that they have that. So it's two separate programs that are working together, and the State Agriculture Department said, yeah, they work hand in glove together.
Let's take a call from Liz in Berks County. Liz, you're on the air.
Hi. I think the main reason, a thing I'd like to emphasize that perhaps listeners who are in a more urban area are not aware of, that when you have land in Clean and Green and you're a farm or you have a house on a larger forested or open space property, you're still paying standard property taxes on buildings, whether it's your home or your barns or auxiliary buildings. You're not getting a break on the buildings on the property. For instance, the McMansions that you're talking about, which I realize is a great exploitation of Clean and Green, they're still going to be paying property taxes on the buildings that are constructed on those 10-acre parcels. And I think you will find that there is a net tax increase. The problem with going back to a market-based land assessment is farmers, open space, people who want to engage in habitat preservation, they do not gain from the increase in market assessment until the property is sold. So if you want to keep the property and your family, if you want to keep the property for farming, you are forced to pay market price. This is a benefit only to realtors and those who earn money on market transactions.
Hey, Liz, thank you very much for your call. And she made a very important point in this whole thing. Something we probably should have mentioned very early on is that Clean and Green only applies to land, right?
That's correct.
Yeah,
yes.
And that is a good point. What you see though in southeastern Pennsylvania is, you know, land is very, very valuable. So one of the examples that we did was of Olympic gold medalist Marty Nothstein, who's the chairman of the Lehigh County Commissioners, and he's also running for Congress. And in his case, he bought a neighbor's home and carved out 6 acres that he added to his lot. And even though his lot was 6 acres larger than it was previously, his assessment actually dropped by 5% because of Clean and Green. So he basically got 6 acres, at least for tax purposes, for free, or even with a little bit of a benefit. And so you see that the land itself can be very valuable in and of itself.
Let's go to Aaron in Lancaster. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Yes, you're welcome.
I was curious with our recent change that municipalities are allowed to change their tax burdens for, not burden, but, you know, your property tax funding schools. Is there a possibility that we might be arguing for nothing, that, you know, some townships and municipalities might be getting away from needing that funding for these things? And I don't know, kind of rambling, but...
Bringing up a good point. You're bringing up a good point because, you know, how we started on this program talking about this, and as Steve mentioned, looking into Senate Bill 76 that would eliminate property taxes. What happens if taxation is not based on property?
Well, he did bring up a good point. If that's, I don't see that happening because property taxes are pretty stable, whether you're talking about these reduced assessments or not. Because every government entity knows what they're going to get for property taxes.
So you're saying you don't think Senate Bill 76, you don't see it passing?
No, I don't think so, because it's just...
But say it does.
If it does, then what the legislature is going to have to do is open up another can of worms. Because right now, under different Pennsylvania laws, agriculture businesses... And for that matter, manufacturing businesses don't pay sales taxes on certain items that they buy for their business. So you're talking about from a hoe up to perhaps a combine, I believe. They don't pay property tax or, excuse me, sales taxes on those items as it relates to their business. So if you reduce the property tax or if you get rid of property taxes, you're going to have to change that law too, that sales exemption law, because then you can't have some people be completely tax exempt versus, you know, other people.
Let's take one more call. Bill is in York. Bill, you're on the air. Hello, Bill. I don't know if he was listening to his radio or not, but he said he saw a news story that claimed those who benefited from Clean and Green were supposed to have land that was open to the public. Wants to know if that's true.
Yeah, so there's the three categories of land: agriculture, forest, or agricultural reserve. The ag reserve, the open space land, is required by law to be accessible to the public without fee or charge. And what we found is at least in all but Allegheny County, that was very, very difficult for the public to be aware of that benefit. The properties aren't advertised by any of the counties save Allegheny County. And in fact, the owners I spoke to, they weren't even aware of which categories of land their properties were on. But you know, the in the books, if it's open space land, you're supposed to be able to you could show up with a picnic basket, you could have an Easter egg hunt there, and it could be someone's backyard. And but that doesn't seem to be advertised much.
And the funny thing about that is when Riley called Allegheny County, the reason Allegheny County puts that information, publicizes it on its website, is because a local TV reporter did that about a decade ago. Walked around with a grill and some picnic baskets, that sort of thing, and set up shop there. And the owners came out and said, "You can't do that." And he pulled out the deed.
Wow. Riley Yates and Steve Essick from Allentown Morning Call. Thank you very much for your work on this series, and thank you for being with us today, bringing it to everyone's attention.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And by the way, you can read the series. It's a lengthy series. They've done a lot of work on this. We have it's on Allentown Morning Call website, obviously, but we have a link on our website, WITF.org, so you can find it there as well. Thanks for listening to Smart Talk today. Many of the topics that we cover on our show come from you. If you have an issue or a topic you'd like to discuss or a general comment for the show, send us a note anytime at smarttalk@witf.org. And you also can tweet your suggestions as well.